tonight's guest, director of Paradigm Research Group.
Look at the night sky. Look at the night sky where the stars are always shining.
I am Mark Fisher, and now our host, the MC, Master James Nico Voltaggio. To say I've been looking forward to this conversation is such an understatement. I have a lot of conversations with people. Actually, we all do here at the Life Changer Show. We know a lot of people. We have a lot of different conversations in every aspect of our lives, our careers. We meet a lot of high-ranking people, interesting people, people that are out there in the field doing this and that and the other thing. And it's interesting that, you know, we say the conversation of let's not talk about politics or religion. Well, we're not afraid to go there with people. But the UFO conversation, that's actually even more interesting than politics and religion, to see how people will often share and then say, but don't share this with anybody. If you say this, I will deny that I have had this conversation with you. To know that this is such a highly charged conversation. And one of the reasons why we haven't had it as much on the Life Changer Show, because finding the right person and Stephen Bassett, our guest, we found a long time ago, but he's been really busy, man. And we just haven't gotten to the conversation that is ever so much more percolating now and is so much more important now. And it's interesting, if we get to touch on it with Stephen, the words themselves are highly charged, and I've never heard of anybody talk about them like Stephen does, like the word UFO itself. So stay tuned for a fascinating conversation. I'm delighted that Stephen Bassett is our guest today, and our musical guest is Chris Pierce, and this promises to be another great show on the Life Changes at Home Edition series right after this.
Have you felt inspired to meditate but you just can't? Do you suffer from anxiety but fidget toys just make you more fidgety? Want to replace negative self-talk in your head that keeps bringing you down? Introducing the latest self-help solution, Phi Beads. Transformational beaded jewelry inspired by ancient wisdom, science, math, and psychology. All Phi Beads are designed to incorporate the powerful Fibonacci sequence, nature's mathematical formula that has shaped our existence from the beginning of time. The Fibonacci sequence, also known as the golden mean or the golden ratio, is recognized by our conscious and unconscious mind and resonates as order out of chaos, like we see in plants, flowers, seashells, ocean waves, the pyramids, and in our own body. Not only beautiful, they feel good to wear. Phi Beads can help anchor tranquility, positivity, focus, and structure in your life by doing the Phi Meditation. Phi Meditation helps you harness the power of I Am, or intention, affirmation, and manifestation. Affirm the life you want. Get your set of Phi Beads at PhiBeads.com. That's Phi, P-H-I, Beads.com. You are listening to The Life Changes Show, live from Vortex Dome LA on the BBS Radio Network with your host, the Master of Change, Filippo Voltaggio. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows on our archive page at LifeChangesShow.com, which include luminaries such as comedian Michael Collier, actress Gabriella Wright, performing artist James Hood, and author Ken Honda. Email your comments and questions to info@lifechangesnetwork.com or askdorothy@lifechangesshow.com. You can also comment via Twitter @LifeChangesShow and Facebook @TheLifeChangesShow.
Jump in. I am Voltaggio, your host, and I am with online Mark Lejeune, our co-host and producer.
I can't wait to jump in either. You know, with my father working at NASA, I grew up looking to the stars and asking questions and wondering. And so this conversation's timely.
Asking questions, and I'm sure not getting answers like so many of the rest of us, but Stephen Bassett has been out there on our behalf. So Beyond Disclosure, The Exopolitical Paradox is the title of this episode. Our guest is the executive director of Paradigm Research Group, PRG, founded in 1996 to end a government-imposed embargo on the truth behind extraterrestrial-related phenomena. He has also spoken to audiences around the world, done over 1,200 radio and television interviews, including all the big networks and all the big newspapers. And he is also host of Disclosure Wire podcast. Welcome, Stephen Bassett, to the Life Changes Show.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Stephen. And as we have a conversation that's been going on for a long time, but you have a conversation that has been going on for a long time that you have taken on in such a big way. What was the spark for you to start this conversation with the world?
I had a decision to make at the age of 49. Keep doing the same thing and expecting the same results, or do something else. And hopefully something that was worth doing, whether it involved money or not. And I made the decision to throw money out of the picture, meaning volunteer. It was an intellectual decision. Ultimately, it spoke to my activist nature, which had always been there, but I had pushed aside in service of the usual things, paying the rent, living day to day. And I made a decision that, okay, I'm going to jump into the extraterrestrial issue in some way, though I wasn't sure how, because I knew how important it was, and I knew there were ETs here when I was 18, though I'd never gotten directly involved in the subject matter, the research, or anything else, just intellectual position. And I got lucky. I had read John Mack's book, Abduction, which impressed me, given who John Mack was, Pulitzer Prize-winning Harvard-trained psychiatrist. And there was an address in the back, and I contacted them and said, let me come out and volunteer. And amazingly enough, without ever meeting me, they said, okay. And so I left California, San Luis Obispo, actually, in the middle of winter, where the weather was fantastic, and went to Cambridge, where the snow was above the buses, and went and volunteered for 4 months. And then up there, I figured out my path. And the path was that the extraterrestrial presence had already been proven many times over. And so why wasn't it absolutely flourishing in all ways, in all institutions? And it wasn't because there wasn't enough evidence. There was enough evidence for anybody that paid attention. And the answer was easy. It was political. It's a political decision. It was embargoed. We called it the UFO cover-up back then, and I fixed that. It was like the embargo of Cuba. Cuba's there, but politically you can't go there. And if you do, you might be put in prison. That was the problem. And therefore, if we were going to resolve it, it had to be through political means, not by piling more evidence on top of more evidence. And so I said, I've been out in Washington my whole life. In fact, I've been bouncing back between Washington, D.C. and the East Coast and California since 1972, literally, like a ping pong ball. And so I was divided that way. I mean, my heart and my left brain were in California, where I was born, but my right brain was in Washington, D.C., for better or for worse. So I came down and I set up an office in the attic of a family home, registered as a lobbyist. I knowing the Washington Post would find that amusing. They sent a reporter out, put a huge huge article on the front page of the business section, giving me instant credibility. And off I went. And that was 24 years ago. So I am not a researcher, I'm a political activist, an exopolitical activist, and ultimately a disclosure advocate. I'm being the activist that I should have been in fullness in college and in the years after college, because there was, God knows, plenty to be activist about. But I was not mature enough to understand it. So that's how it happened.
So actually, if the evidence is there, as you say, and well, the evidence is there, as you say, and mm-hmm. that it also has been disclosed in many ways by some high-ranking military officials and comments made by, like, the First Lady of Japan and even the Pope and all that stuff. But you're saying that what are you saying that the kind of disclosure that has to happen in order?
Yeah, what you've been referring to is evidence. In other words, people making statements who have authority that they've seen this or done that. And that's all part of the what I call the small d disclosure process. One way to look at a scientific process or any kind of research or discovery process is that you're trying to find information. And you can find it yourself or people can give it to you. But ultimately, it's a process of revealing. And so this process of revealing by whatever means the nature and the reality of the ET presence is the small d disclosure process. That's been going on since the beginning. Let's go back to 47. And you were referring to part of that. What I'm interested in is not small d disclosure, because again, we've already had enough of that to prove the ET presence, but capital D disclosure, which I carefully defined to be exactly what I wanted it to be in order to avoid ever having to be contradicted. Capital D disclosure is the formal acknowledgement of the extraterrestrial presence by heads of states of state of nations. In other words, when it comes out of the president's mouth in a formal announcement to the public, whatever the prelude to that, that is disclosure. And it will start almost certainly with a single head of state. There are three or four most likely candidates. Over time, it's varied as to who is the most likely. It was always favoring the United States for various reasons. And now it looks like it will be the president of the United States that will make this announcement. Some people prefer to call it the confirmation because they hate this, they're confused by this small d, capital D nomenclature. But confirmation meaning formal confirmation, the announcement. There is an extraterrestrial presence. So now we can move on from there and learn more, and the government will actually facilitate in learning more because we are less compelled to literally embargo this from you. So language is important here, and I try to clarify it as best I can.
So you register actually let's go there. Language is important. You have a brilliant, if you could just real quickly tell us why the UFO is like a misnomer.
Yeah, if someone goes and watches my first blog, I put up a single podcast, rather. It took a year to do it, and it's been many weeks since the first one. And so I'm going to have to pick up the pace here pretty soon, but I've been dealing with other things. But eventually I hope to be doing a podcast a week. If you go watch it, it's disclosurewire.org. Just go there and you can find a link to it. It's on YouTube. It'll be everywhere else in time. I devoted most of that to language. In political activism, successful political activism, it's imperative to have the right language for a number of reasons. First of all, if you have the right language, then people will understand what it is you're trying to do, what it is you want. And that's really important. If people are going to give time, money, effort, even risk their lives to pursue something, it's nice to know exactly where we're going. And the secondly is that activism ultimately is, with few exceptions, I'm trying to think of, it's hard to find an exception, is always about trying to get government or authority, high authority, to do something it doesn't want to do. Always. Always. Sometimes it's about educating authority to do something that they had no idea they were supposed to do, and that's a little more comfortable and an easier road. But the do it, you don't want to do it, that's tougher, and the bigger the issue, the tougher it gets. And so one of the things that all activists face is that governments develop their own language to define the status of something. They will name people something. They will give an idea, a term, specifically designed to serve the government's desire to not have to deal with it. In other words, It's an aspect of propaganda. Propaganda can be long strings of sentences and paragraphs explaining a bunch of stuff that's totally bogus but serves their agenda. But they also can simply take simple words and phrases and make them tools to maintain their policy. Seen it over and over again. In the ET area, which is the truth embargo of the ET issue, is massively infused with propaganda, they did some great stuff. UFO was early on. Ruppelt, who was running Blue Book, started using it instead of flying saucer because flying saucer was a little bit too, how would you say, descriptive. So unidentified flying object, UFO. That's what we're studying. That's what we're looking at. How ridiculous. You know, it's like, what? It's unidentified. Well, it's a flying object and we need to study it. No, it's an unidentified flying object. Well, when does it become identified? It never really will be. It's just going to always be unidentified. And so it was ideal to constantly, every time it's used, you're basically saying without even realizing it, we still haven't figured it out yet.
Mm.
It's like naming atomic physics unidentified tiny particles, UTPs. We have a department of unidentified tiny particles.
Wow.
So it was nonsense. But then they got better as the truth embargo became more sophisticated. Okay, they had that term that was key. Now, dump all the ridicule you can on that term. Point fun at it. Make jokes about it. And by the way, governments love to do this about people, races, religions. Come up a term to define that person or that religion. Heap all the ridicule on it. And pretty soon, everybody wants you to leave the country. And so they heaped all that ridicule on it. So UFO became the fundamental ridicule target. And after enough years of that, the moment you utter that word or write that word, all that ridicule attaches to you like a tar baby, and you are thrown into what I like to call an intellectual ghetto. This is genius and was at the core of maintaining the truth embargo for 74 years, in spite of the fact that the evidence was overwhelming that UFOs were extraterrestrial craft. And so at some point, I started, and others started to say, let's just ditch UFO. We need something else. UAV or UAP. UAP was the one that emerged. UAV was used occasionally, unidentified aerial vehicle, but it's mostly unidentified aerial phenomena. UAP. And it became formalized probably for the very first time when it was uttered by Hillary Clinton on the Jimmy Kimmel show back during her campaign. But it's become part of the language in the Senate Appropriations Bill. And so, okay, what's your point, Steve? Here's the point. UAP means exactly the same thing as UFO. Unidentified aerial phenomena or unexplained aerial phenomena means exactly the same as unidentified flying objects, except that UAP does not have six decades of ridicule heaped on it, thus make it more palatable and easier for people who are trying to engage the issue initially to utter those words. Mm. And it goes on from that, all right? Mm. Let's see. UFO cover-up, of course, became the natural phrase. But it's not a cover-up. It was never a cover-up. So back in the late 90s, I started changing the language. I said, it's not a cover-up. We have to call it something else. And I came up with the phrase truth embargo. Why? Simple. First of all, it's not about UFOs. Secondly, it's not a cover-up. A cover-up implies illegality. You don't cover up legal activities. You cover up illegal activities. And so by saying UFO cover-up, you are saying that everyone in the national security structure, Army, Navy, Air Force, CIA, DOD, whatever, are illegally covering up the extraterrestrial issue. You've just criminalized them all. Well, criminalizing everybody inside the government is not a way to make friends and influence people. And it's not true. The policy of embargoing ET issues, it was completely legal under the National Security Act of 1947. And so let's say what it is. It is a embargo, like the Cuba embargo. Absolutely legal. You can't go there. All right? So UFO cup, then ufology. Yeah, ufology was inevitable. Forget it. It's extraterrestrial phenomena research. Some people just don't like that many syllables, but ufology is a negative. Get rid of that. Paranormal. People kept saying it's a paranormal phenomenon. It's not a paranormal phenomenon. extraterrestrials are as normal as anything. In fact, it's worse than that. Everything in the universe is normal. There is no paranormal. That is an illusion. Right? The entire universe is quite normal. And to say it's not is an arrogance that humans love to indulge in. Right?
Wow, so, I never heard that.
Yeah. And so why is that important? Because when I used to go in the bookstores, the UFO issue might be in the paranormal section or the New Age section, sometimes put it in the religious section. If it's paranormal, it's outside the normal, right? Mm-hmm. Which then allows you to attach it to a whole bunch of stuff that's part of ancient lore and myths and other things. It contaminates it, which, of course, is what the government wanted you to think. Mm-hmm. And so paranormal, that's gone, right? And so forth. So and then ultimately disclosure, which is my contribution. Dr. Stephen Greer, I think, was the key person in developing the term disclosure in the early 90s to mid-1990s. He had the Disclosure Project. And by and large, he was referring to the process of disclosure, the revealing, which might be the government telling us things, getting information from somebody, whatever. But it was the disclosure process, small d. I believe I'm the one that said, wait a minute, let's capitalize that D and make it an event. But more than that, make it the prize. And this was something this activist movement never really had, was a prize. Every major activist movement has got to have a prize. There was a very profound documentary called Eye on the Prize, and it's all about the civil rights movement. What was the prize in the civil rights movement? It was the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act. That's what they wanted. That's what they were going to get. Many died getting there, but they knew what they had to get. It was defined. It was clear. Same thing with the Indian independence movement and virtually every other independence movement to free us from the British colonial reign, which still exists in the form of 55 Commonwealth countries who are two-thirds people of color, though apparently the royal family hasn't fully appreciated that fact. The point is that there was a goal, right? The women's suffrage movement, absolute clear goal. We need a voting rights amendment so we can vote. What was the goal in the extraterrestrial phenomena issue, the UFO issue? There really wasn't. It was to prove it. But what if it's already been proved? You needed a goal. What was the goal? The goal's disclosure. And what is that? As they say, it's the formal acknowledgement, confirmation of the extraterrestrial presence by heads of state of nations. Once that moment occurs, and it could take 30 seconds, though it'll be preceded by congressional hearings and a lot of other stuff, all of which is coming pretty soon. At that moment, you're in the post-disclosure world, and the whole thing changes. Your show is called Life Changes.
Right.
Well, I'm gonna make a daring statement.
Okay.
Nothing in the history of the human race, and there's a lot of big candidates for this prize, will compare to the life changes that will occur when the acknowledgement of the extraterrestrial presence by governments takes place and we enter the post-disclosure world.
You know,
that is the goal.
Stephen, saying that in March of 2021, after the kind of year we had in 2020, is an even bigger statement than had you made it any other time before that. So having said that, what would it look like if in an hour, disclosure with the big D happened? What would change right away and eventually?
Oh. I do 4-hour interviews because now it is podcasts.
This
I've
is
done some
2-3-4-hour
podcast guy, and that question is the kind I get on those. I appreciate your asking it, but there isn't even the vaguest amount of time to answer it in a meaningful way. However, I'm going to do you one better. I'm going to give you the Reader's Digest version of what's going down in a few minutes. If anybody wants to follow up on what I'm about to say, they need to go to my website, paradigmresearchgroup.org. I know you have a link to it on my site. And you want to go to resources, and you want to scroll down under resources to Print Media Archive. And when you get to the Print Media Archive, you got to go and find October 11th, 2017. And you start right there. And you will see the beginning of some articles that are earmarked regarding the To the Stars Academy. And you want to go forward chronologically and read all of the articles that are earmarked regarding the To the Stars Academy and subsequent events that have been spawned by this organization and other things. There are about 700, all earmarked. It's about a 400-page book. Read every single one of them. Then go over, go up to the top, go over to issues, drop on down to To the Stars Academy, go to the media section on that, and you will find 160 videos of interviews of members of the Academy, as well as some video commentary by various news people. 160. Watch every one of those, read all 700 articles, and you're going to get pretty well what I'm about to tell you. But without doing that, you're going to go, are you kidding me, Steve? All right, here is what is happening. The goal of the To the Stars Academy from the day it was created as a proxy NGO for the military intelligence complex was to pull together very key people no longer working for the government under standard payrolls to announce this organization shortly after Hillary Clinton won the presidency, maybe in late November, early December, take two huge stories to the New York Times, get those out in the front page. And then after Hillary Clinton was in office, put the help to negotiate congressional hearings so that she could be the disclosure president, which was her intention all along, going all the way back to 2000. The truth embargo would end. This organization, the To the Stars Academy, would raise tens of millions of dollars and pursue a multi-faceted mission and ascend into heaven. That was the plan. It was a great plan. And it didn't work out because she didn't win. And the whole thing was thrown up in the air. And we entered a four-year period that the Chinese would call interesting times, leaving them literally up in the air with not sure what to do. Ultimately, they made the decision to launch the To the Stars Academy October 11th, 2017. That's when those articles begin, 700 articles. They had to slow walk things. They had to deal with the vicissitudes of probably the most bizarre political situation the nation has ever seen. And then eventually they had to deal with the odd global pandemic of unprecedented proportions. But they stuck with it. As the Trump administration dragged on, they had to do more things behind the scenes, and that's okay, which was they needed to do that anyway. And so ultimately, where is this going? Political operative Christopher Mellon has been briefing members of Congress, including committee chairs, for a year and a half, taking witnesses up there, like the pilots from the Nimitz case and others, to impress upon them what's going down, private, off the record, not for public consumption. We know this has happened because about five or six of these members of Congress have admitted they were briefed without getting into the details. Two of them have taken action, most notably Marco Rubio, who then was the chairman of the most important committee here, the Senate Intelligence Committee. But many others were briefed. Meanwhile, Luis Elizondo, the DIA operative from the DOD, and a fantastic man, a brilliant man, and one of the just an extraordinary human being, as more people will find out in time. He has been gathering and vetting witnesses, military witnesses. We know they've been approached by scores of witnesses, which they helped to bring to them by putting the New York Times articles, creating the unidentified series, and making it clear to thousands of military people around the world, either active or retired, who have intersected with this issue, that maybe it's okay to come forward now. So the military witnesses have been lined up. People have been briefed in Congress, all to achieve what they intended to do in the first place, was to begin full, broad-scale, multi-spectrum hearings on the ET issue, the first since 1968, which was a one-day, four-witness affair designed to do nothing more than to tell people, we're done now, go away. But this would be the real deal. They would be watched by hundreds of millions of people. military witnesses providing extraordinary evidence, such as we've seen in the New York Times and the Nimitz case, but so much more. And once the evidence is accumulated to a certain point, then in a very politically safe and appropriate way, the president of the United States, who last I checked was Joe Biden, will meet with key people at the Pentagon as well as key congressional leaders, and they will privately conclude that the evidence is clear, as the people have just seen. The ET presence is clearly established, and I think it's now okay to formally acknowledge that. And the president will be able to come out and say, I've seen the evidence you've seen. I now confirm there's an extraterrestrial presence, which is the way it's supposed to be done. Not suddenly turning up one day and surprising the nation with, yeah, there's extraterrestrials here. Yeah, I've known about it since I was 20. We just didn't want to tell you, but I'm telling you today. Uh-uh. That's political suicide for everybody concerned. That's what's going down. And the only thing that's setting the time frame right now, as the insurrection starts to fade, though it's still around, and God knows what'll happen from that, but as it fades, is the pandemic schedule, which is primarily two matters: the rise of the variants and the vaccination progress. I do predict that within 60 days, we will be at a place where we can definitely have in-person hearings on the Hill. Everybody will be vaccinated, including me. I'll be there, but I'll be sitting in the back, of course. And these hearings will begin. And this embargo, after 75 years, 4 years, will finally end. And we will be in the post-disclosure world. And as to answer your question, what will it be like? 50,000 books will be written through the rest of this century about what it will be like. So you get an opportunity to do a five-hour show, bring me on, and we'll discuss the post-disclosure world. And all I can say is, all is flux. And life will change for the world on a scale and a magnitude unseen in human history. The most profound event in human history will have taken place. No disrespect intended to certain religious events of note, but if you are assessing the profundity based upon how many people are affected in the shortest amount of time, the disclosure event, and obviously the global civilization we have, will affect more people in the shortest amount of time than any event even remotely comparable in human history. And that's how you get real change of every type: technological, worldview, psychological, relationships, and of course, science. We will spend the rest of our life keeping up with these changes. And then, of course, we have the key decision, which is where the work really begins, and what I've been aiming for all along, it just took a little longer, is when you have a paradigm change of that magnitude, and you have a world disconnected, and you have all the tools that we have, never will a civilization, meaning the global civilization, or just people in general, ever have a greater opportunity to shape the kind of world that we're going to get. Because when you have a change of that magnitude, everything is kind of thrown up in the air to be reformed, to be reset. And then the question is, how many people and how many nations are going to step up to that and go, okay, I get it. Everything is changing, and here's how we want it to go. Or they can sit back, watch their TV, and let the elitist economic and political powers simply reshape the world to their liking, and they will get the same situation they had before. And the situation we have now, before, is a situation which, analyzed from any perspective, barring some profound event, will result in only one thing. The 21st century will become a catastrophe such that the living will envy the dead. And that's optimistic.
Well, that's not going to happen, because based on what you said, in 60 more days or so, should things progress as you've been sharing them, we're going to have some life changes like we've never seen before. And we've thought we've seen some. So I actually went to those pages as well on your website. So I'm going to mention the website here, paradigmresearchgroup.org. And of course, your podcast, of which you will be having more of yourself,
hopefully,
is disclosurewire.org. Well, hopefully, and at the same time, you know, the focus may change as all of this progresses, right?
Look, I've already booked 60 interviews this year. I've done 43. I'll probably book another 100 over the next 90 days. And this message is going to be told shorter and longer versions over and over again, because governments can change their mind. China could sink one of our aircraft carriers by mistake in the South China Sea. A new variant could show up with a 20% fatality rate. God knows what could take place. And so we are now near the finish line. We need as many people to step forward and say, fine, we're going to finish this race, and we're not going to allow the government to move the goalpost or move the finish line anymore. This is it. We're going to put pressure on our members of Congress, on the media. There's plenty of coverage. People are talking. It's a totally different world. Nevertheless, they have to be constantly reminded that, hey, we get it. We've seen the articles. We know this is real, and now it's time for you to confirm it to us so we can move on with civilization. People just can't go limp on this. The fact that we're close is no time to slow down or sit on the curb. We've got to finish this race. We cannot stumble at the end, fall flat in our face 20 feet from the finish line. And so my job is to marshal people to the extent possible, media, podcasters, whatever the hell, whoever bring me on, to know we're almost there, people. I'm inviting you to look and see those lights, the lights at the end of this finish line, and know that you can get there. And so let's get there. Let's do not allow government to yank this out from under us for whatever stupid-ass reason they come up with. Because they're already showing they're on our side. The Navy, the Army, the Department of Defense, which I assure you would never have let the To the Stars Academy exist if there were enough opposition inside to make it happen. So we've got the military intelligence complex on our side. But we have our problems. We've got unbelievably bad politics. We've got a pandemic that was mismanaged to a point that's, you know, going to be discussed for the next 1,000 years. Only thing that'll save us from total ignominy will be the fact that Brazil's disaster is going to be far worse than ours, which means that Bolsonaro's place in history is cemented. He is royally screwed, and deservedly so. We have a lot of things happening. So what? The confirmation of the extraterrestrial presence transcends politics. It transcends religion. It transcends viruses. It transcends individual idiosyncrasies. It transcends everything. And that's a message I like to say, because I love to say the word transcends. It just really rings well. What can I say?
You've said a lot, and if anybody is even remotely curious, what Stephen was saying about the pages and pages and articles and articles and articles, they are there at paradigmresearchgroup.org. Stephen, thank you so much. I have to give a shout out to both Foster Gamble and Kimberly Carter Gamble at ThriveOn.com for inadvertently sitting us together at a dinner years ago, but it was meant to be, and they introduced us, and the conversation has just grown from there. And look, it sounds like you have your work cut out for you when this happens, until this happens, after this happens. So look forward to connecting with you again. Stephen Bassett, thank you so much.
This was a pleasure, and I really do hope we have more conversations and maybe get together in person again as soon as I'm fully vaccinated.
Okay. And so with that, once again, a big thank you to Stephen Bassett, paradigmresearchgroup.org and disclosurewire.org. Ciao, ciao for now. And ciao. We'll be right back with our Ask Dorothy question. And after that, our musical guest, Chris Pierce, on the Life Changes Show at Home Edition, right after this.
The Little Dog That Could is the fantastically true story of a man and the little dog that came into his life as his mentor to help him understand the world beyond his human senses and to experience life, love, and healing beyond his human understanding. Best-selling author Filippo Voltaggio, who currently hosts the highly regarded Life Changes show, is an internationally known singer, speaker, and life coach. Filippo offers up his own story, how one little surprise package in fur and four legs transformed his life unexpectedly forever and furthered his path of self-discovery. In The Little Dog That Could, Filippo brings to life the meaning of the adage, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. Through the reading of this book, you will experience the journey of real miracles that transcend time, space, and logic while gaining practical tools that will help you navigate your way. The Little Dog That Could is available through Amazon and Barnes & Noble. For more information, visit thelittledogthatcould.com. That's thelittledogthatcould.com.
You are listening to the Life Changes Show, live from Vortex Dome LA, with your host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can visit us online at lifechangesshow.com, via Twitter at Life Changes Show, and Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
We are back and we have our Ask Dorothy question.
Dear Dorothy, this is Carla from Missouri, and I've begun questioning what love is because of the way my beloved husband treats me. James tells me that I'm the love of his life, and at the same time, he is consistently pointing out what I need to do differently. He asks me to dress differently, to talk differently, think differently, and behave differently. He is constantly reacting to almost everything I say in a very negative way, and I feel judged. And I have gone from being very happy to being extremely miserable. I love him with all my heart, and yet my love seems so completely different from what he believes love is. His actions and words are often completely different from what I would do or say, yet I have been able, for the most part, to accept his behavior with grace and ease. My question is, how can our versions of love be so absolutely contradictory?
My dear Carla, dictionary.com defines love as profoundly tender, passionate affection for another person. However, we humans often learn what love is from our parents and older family members. They, in turn, learned what they believe love is from their parents and older family members. For example, my parents demonstrated their love for me by telling me how bad I was. I understand now that they did this because this is the way their parents treated them, and I believe that my parents treated me in this way in the hope that I would conform to be exactly perfect according to their beliefs of perfection. In other words, I do not believe that they truly disliked me, and instead they wanted me to be more like what they believed I should be, instead of allowing me to develop my own unique personality. I allowed their version of love to be my reasoning for choosing a very difficult path for myself until I had an awakening to what love really is, and am blessed to be one of the lucky ones to figure it out before I totally self-destructed. Unfortunately, most of us are raised to look outside of ourselves for love, when the truth is that the only person we truly need to love is ourselves. I intuit that your husband was raised with a similar belief to my parents' definition of what love is. You, on the other hand, seem to have learned that love is tender, compassionate acceptance and deep affection for one another. I suggest that you find a way to love yourself enough to make the most elegant choice possible for you, and that would be for you to take your power back and not allow his words or actions to dictate your state of mind. I urge you to get personal counseling, which could lead to couples counseling, and I trust you will then find the best solution possible to restore your happiness level.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, please write her at askdorothy@lifechangesshow.com.
And now our musical guest is an internationally acclaimed singer-songwriter. He stands by the notion that music can cut through the isolated and static feelings for those of us worn down by the chaos of everyday life. Welcome, Chris Pierce, to the Life Changes Show.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Good to have you with us. You have been quite a busy one yourself, actually. We've been wanting to have this happen for a long time, but the things that you have been up to, sharing your music and sharing your version of love, I should say, through music. Tell us about your connection with how you share your music to the world.
Well, it's pretty deep. You know, I recognized along with my family and community that music was a main source of communication for me, and also a place of refuge from the time I was a small child. And I gravitated towards music and got really involved in not only local theater, but found clips in the papers that starting at age 7 or 8 and would have my parents drive me out to auditions. And I got involved in some television work when I was young, a television show called Kids Incorporated, and some other things when I was, you know, 3rd or 4th, 5th grade. And so that really, you know, started this really just this incredible path in my relationship with music. And around when I was around 15, something really very drastic happened. I went deaf. And I was diagnosed with a condition called otosclerosis, which is the deformation of the stapes bone in the inner ear. And it was devastating. It was like losing a best friend or a loved one. But I was able to, with the support of family and community, have an operation on my right ear and regain some of my hearing in my right ear, which I still have to this day. And I decided I had a couple of choices. I could either let this define me, this situation, or I could continue on the path of doing what I love and fight for it. And I fight for it to this day. I decided to go to college. I got the Ella Fitzgerald Scholarship to study music and jazz studies at USC. And then I started playing coffee houses and got discovered by Seal, who took me on the road as his opening act for his world tour. And I've been making independent albums and music for TV and film, and doing a lot of touring up until a year ago, ever since. And that is, that's been my relationship of love with music and expression. And I feel like with like anything that's good in life, and any love that's the love is worth fighting for. And so that's what I've done. I've fought for music. I've fought for a way to express, and I'm very thankful that to be here talking with you today and making some music.
Well, I was very taken by your last album, the one it just came out, right? American Silence.
It came out last Friday.
Last
Friday. Yeah.
Congrats. I knew it was just recent, but wow. This is the one that the Rolling Stones wrote, LA singer-songwriter Chris Pierce channels Richie Havens and Bob Dylan, .. It's the sound of everyone who's hungry for change.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that really blew my mind.
Nice. NPR has written and talked about, oh my gosh, I mean, the list goes on, and it just came out this Friday, of course. You know, I was going to say you started out in TV as a kid, but you're still in TV in a maybe even bigger way. This Is Us.
Yeah.
For example.
Yeah.
One of many.
Yeah, I got to write a song for the show, and they used it 3 times in the show, 3 different versions, and it was really a surreal experience because I got to I got chosen to co-write the song with the main composer of the show, and we wrote it in a sitting, and then it was sent to the executive producer and the producers, and they loved it, and within a week, I was in the studio recording the song with my band and a version with an incredible actor named Brian Tyree Henry. And then they said, Chris, why don't you, I know you're the songwriter and you play guitar, but how about we stick you in the scene of the show as the guitar player? So the scene took took place in the early 70s. So they put some real tight bell bottoms on me and a leather vest and picked my afro out. And there I was on the screen playing guitar, which was really cool. And then the scene, the song ended up shooting up to the top of the Billboard charts, the number one on the Blues Billboard chart for 4 weeks. And then they decided that they wanted me to do an acoustic version of the song, along with a version by an incredible song singer named Hannah Miller from Nashville. And so they ended up using it three times, three different ways on the show, which was incredible. And we got some nominations on the song, and I got to play it at the Television Academy with the Emmy Orchestra. And it was just an incredible journey of that song.
I know that's just one of many journeys that you've had, and there'll be more to talk about now that we've connected, thanks to Tess Cacciatore. And so looking forward to more, but in the meantime, we get to hear that very song. Was that the first one you were going to do?
Sure, yes, absolutely. I'd love to do that.
Okay, so it was used in the number one NBC primetime series on three different episodes so far. This is Us. And then again, it was number one on the Billboard Blue charts for 4 weeks. This is Chris Pierce performing his song live. We can always come back to this on the Life Changers Show at Home Edition.
All right. Standing at the station, we don't know what to say. Looking out the window as you're rolling away. If I'm gonna be alone, let it be with you. Mother, don't you cry, we're gonna be all right. Just open up your suitcase when you get there tonight. You're not alone. I'm always here with you. Where we go from here, oh, no matter how the cards will fall, I'll pick you up and you hold me too. So don't give up on me, I'll never give up on you. Everything's gonna be all right. I know you believe it too. If I'm gonna be alone, oh, let it be with you. We can always come back to this. We can always come back to this. We can always, always, always come back to this. Oh, yes, we can always come back to this. We can always, 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 always come back to this.
Chris Pierce. Wow. Wow, thank you so much. Chris Pierce, P-I-E-R-C-E, chrispierce.com. I am Chris Pierce on Instagram. I am Chris Pierce on Facebook. And on Twitter, Chris Pierce, P-I-E-R-C-E. Chris, wow.
Oh, man. Thank you, Filippo. Thanks for having me. It's such a great opportunity to make this music and to share the moment together tonight.
You know, I wish we're going to have time for another song, but I wish we had more for people to know more of your story, which leads to if you could share just a little bit, because I know that part of your mission is being a voice against inequality, injustice, and oppression, which pumps deep through the veins of your life's work as a songwriter and performer. I was taken by the songs on this album that just came out, from the titles and what they stand for, from people of every walk of life that I can think of, you've put in this to be represented here. Why?
Yeah, you know, I found myself, as we all did, last early spring, late winter, in this place of stillness and isolation, and I was able to really be alone and be still with some deep thoughts that I've been kind of rushing through in life for decades. Some things that not only have happened to me, but have happened to friends, and things that I've seen and thoughts that I've had. And I think in life, it's sometimes easy for us to see things and find a way to deal with it emotionally so we don't have to really deal with it, and kind of push it aside and just keep pushing through. I think it's important to keep pushing through in life, but I also think it's important to face some of the things that are uncomfortable for us to face and to think about and to face them head on. And so that was my mission with this, with the album American Silence. You know, it was created as an offer of a message of resilience, empowerment, and to remind those who have been oppressed to never give up the fight. And it's also, I feel it's important to not give up. I didn't make it necessarily for people that agree with me. I feel like it's important to not give up on reaching out to those who've stayed silent for too long about the issues that around all of us that affect us all. And I feel like complacency is an addiction, and it plagues our society. And so I wanted to say, will you listen? And if you do, will you sing with me? Because simply making a post on social media and then patting yourself on the back, it changes nothing. You know, silence doesn't bring change. Talking and educating does. And so that's what this album is all about.
So we're going to get to hear one of the songs that just came out, as you heard, this Friday. Thank you for, I mean, great timing. We've been wanting this for a long time, and here we are. So here's a song that you're going to share with us today. And it's the song that you say I would have benefited hearing as a child.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a song called Young, Black, and Beautiful. And I wrote it thinking back to a time when it kind of went to with my mother, her hearing, oh, he's so cute, what a cute kid, to her seeing people crossing the streets when we were walking towards them, and car doors being locked and women clenching their purses as I'd walk by. and what that felt like, not only as for her as a parent, but for me as a child growing into adolescence. And it honestly, it makes you feel ugly. It makes you feel like there's something, you're some kind of monster or something that people are running away of and afraid of. So I wrote this song called Young, Black, and Beautiful as to combat that idea and that feeling. And so this is Young, Black, and Beautiful.
Keep walking on against the wind. When you fall down, get up again. You may be pushed, shoved, and tossed. Know in your heart it's their loss. Hold your head high, king and queen. Don't ever lose sight of your dreams. Remember you're young, black and beautiful. Your roots are strong, young child. No storm will dampen your fire. You'll find a way to navigate along a blessed path. You'll lead the way. You'll demonstrate with grace. Don't look away from whatever you face. Remember you're young, black and beautiful. In times of uncertainty, always stand by your belief. Belief in a higher ground where you'll be safe and sound. Fight the good fight. Day and night, lead them with favor into the light. Remember you're young, black and beautiful. Remember you're young, black.
You're a beautiful man.
Ah, thank you. Thank you. I love holding that note at the end.
I know. You told me about
all my neighbors, you know.
Chris, that's amazing. You're amazing. So glad to be connected here finally and to have your music represented here on the show, and looking forward to more and hearing more good news and reviews and sales about the album. All the best to you. ChrisPierce.com, PIERCE.com, on Instagram and Facebook. I am Chris Pierce, and on Twitter, Chris Pierce, right?
Yeah, Filippo, thanks for shining your light on my music and journey. I really, really appreciate you having me.
Well, all the best to you. Our pleasure. And that is our show. On top of a big thank you to Chris Pierce, our musical guest, we want to thank again Stephen Bassett, our guest. And on behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our producer and co-host, Mark Legere, I am your host, Filippo Voltaggio, reminding you that if your life has changed, even just a little bit as much as ours has tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at The Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.